If you'll take your Bibles with me this morning and turn to the book of John, and we're going to begin reading in chapter 11, verse 1. I'm going to skip around just a little bit, so I'll try to tell you when we're moving ahead. John chapter 11, and we're going to be talking this morning about the story of the death of Lazarus. Now, a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and sister Martha. Let's put this in context on the scene. So we know that Jerusalem is situated right next to the Mount of Olives. There's just a little valley that's in between. And so we go from Jerusalem, just across a little valley called the Kidron Valley, up the mountain of Mount Olives, which is about the size of Nose Hill. Okay? So it's not mountain, just a little hill. And you go up over the top of the Mount of Olives and down the other side, and about halfway down the Mount of Olives on the other side, we come to the little town of Bethany. That's the village that we're talking about. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to the disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." Do you think that's a little odd? Did you catch that? He loved Mary and Martha so much that he said, "Let's stay here 2 more days. Before we go to see how bad Lazarus is." On his arrival in verse 17, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die." Do you believe this? Jesus, once more deeply moved in verse 38, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been in there 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you've heard me. I knew that you would always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and his feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." You and I have been celebrating something that we've been calling Lent. Lent is the 40 days of preparation that we go through to get ready for the day in which Jesus Christ will be crucified on the cross and then his resurrection. We've been walking with Jesus in this journey as he prepares himself for the cross. And every day that we have been doing this study together, we have seen the cross looming on the horizon in different ways. Remember, first of all, that Jesus had faced the temptation of the devil in the desert, in the wilderness. And we confronted him seeing the devil, enticing him to live a life of comfort and ease. Jesus spoke truth to Nicodemus, inviting him to come and be born again, to find spiritual life, preparing Nicodemus for what the cross would bring. Then remember, we saw Jesus meeting the woman at the well and spoke to her deepest need and reminded her that what she longed for was the water of life, not just something to drink. No shortcuts to security. Remember, Jesus last week healed the blind man and in the process helped that blind man see what he'd never seen before, that Jesus is the light of the world. All of this is preparation for the cross, the place where faith will finally be truly tested, the place where the greatest sacrifice would be made, the place where forgiveness would flow down like a river over all of those who would look and see that the cross was the greatest expression of love, a life laid down for his friends. Well, this morning we take one further step in the Lenten journey. A step that will prepare your heart and my heart in an even deeper way for what God wants to do in us. It's a walk of faith that moves us past the superficial to a place where we will have to confront the things that tend to crowd out our faith. Remember at the start of our story, where is Jesus? He's down by the River of Jordan where John, his cousin, the Baptist, has been doing his baptizing. It's a place where the Jordan River dumps into the Dead Sea. He is near Jericho, where John the Baptist has been baptizing the people who come near him. These are the last days of the ministry. In just a few days, Jesus will be joining his disciples in Jerusalem for the Passover, where he will be arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, tried and convicted, tortured and crucified on the cross. There's a great spiritual weight that rests on everything he does now. There's an intensity to Jesus' ministry as he builds toward the culmination of all that he has done and all that he is. Jesus is in the wilderness again. Along the river, it is lined with trees and tall grass. But the rest of the land is bleak and barren and hot and dry and desolate. It's a healing, restorative place for Jesus. Remember, Jesus frequently retreats to the desert. And it was in the desert that Jesus would be ministered to by the Father. They tried to stone him while he was in Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem, the anti-Jesus sentiment was growing by the day. The people were more polarized than ever. It was like election was coming. The religious types wanted Jesus gone, and they were prepared to kill him for it. And the plot was underway. But on the other side, the common person loved him, admired him. His ability to confront the status quo was amazing them. They hoped that he would one day come and be the one that who would save them, give them freedom. And the message that Jesus gave and the miracles he did went straight to the hearts of the people. People came down out of Jerusalem, came down out of the hills to this place of John the Baptist. And it was in that place that they would hear the message of Jesus and see his miracles, and they would respond to him. More and more people were becoming followers of Jesus. And while he is teaching, a messenger from Jerusalem runs up or from Bethany, runs up and whispers into Jesus' ear, "Lazarus is very sick. The one you love is sick." Out of all the people that Jesus knew and loved, he immediately knows that it is Lazarus that is being talked about. Mary, who washed his feet with perfume at the public evening meal, her sister Martha, and brother Lazarus, all part of the same family. Jesus had frequently spent time with them. They'd become close friends. Jesus was part of them. It was natural for Jesus to go to their place. They lived in Bethany, and he was right on the road as they went up and down from Jerusalem to Jericho. It was convenient. I remember when my granddaughter was sick with pneumonia in the children's hospital. I dropped everything, and Lori and I went to be at the hospital as quick as we possibly could. I wanted to be there to see for myself and to be near her and to take care of her in every way that we possibly could. I was almost desperate to get there, driving too fast. But what does Jesus do when he hears that Lazarus is sick and dying? He decides to wait 2 days. What do you think my daughter would have thought if I'd have said, you know, Mom and I are a little occupied right now. We'll come in a couple days to see how things are going. Think that would have gone well? It says that even though, I like this phrase, even though Jesus loved them, he stayed where he was for 2 more days saying, the sickness won't end in death. Isn't that a word of comfort? Now, why do you think Mary and Martha sent the message that Lazarus is sick to Jesus? Why do you think they did that? Because they thought he needed the information so that he wouldn't be surprised when he got there. No. It's pretty clear that they sent the message so that Jesus would do what? Come. And do something about it. In fact, when Jesus arrives, they end up being irritated with him. They're trying to hold back on their irritation. But if you'd have been here earlier, then Lazarus wouldn't be dead. Everyone knows that the quicker you address an illness, the greater chance you have of healing the illnesses. That's why we have EMTs and ambulances, isn't it? Can you imagine? My son is dying in the backyard. Well, we got a number of other calls. We'll see you in a couple of days. Let us know how it works out. Not a happy camper. But that's what Jesus does. He's the EMT. He's the ambulance. Come quickly. Got a couple other things. Be there in a few days. It's a race against time. If you don't address the shock, you're going to lose the person. There's a fine line between life and death, and time is of the essence. You've got to hurry. But Jesus stays 2 more days. Now the walk from around Jericho, where Jesus is, up to Bethany is about 14 miles or 20 kilometers, easily walked in a day. When Jesus arrives in Bethany, he finds that Lazarus is not only dead, but he's been in the tomb for 4 days. And they don't want to open up the tomb because it smells in there. Jewish custom was is that when you died, you needed to be buried within the 24-hour period. So that's what these sisters have done. And the sisters have had mourn for 4 days. And all their friends have joined them in the sorrow. And in their culture, you also hired people to come and mourn with you. Professional mourners. The more mourners that were there, the more important or significant was the person who died. But also, mourning was a communal affair. Everybody was in on the mourning. And so the professional mourners would carry on with the mourning while the people who actually lost the person went back home and got a little rest from everything that was going on. So that the mourning would continue on all day and all night. The mourning was loud and continuous and highly expressive. And so you can imagine the noise and the number of people and the chaos that Jesus entered into when he arrived that afternoon. This is all important for us to understanding what Jesus will do. the mourning is only supposed to really last for 3 days, and then it kind of drifts off after that. Jewish belief was that the soul kind of hovered over the body for about 3 days in this sort of uncertain, disembodied state. But the fourth day was absolute evidence that the person was really dead, that the source of life, that the soul had truly departed, and that all hope was gone. It's finished. Isn't it interesting that that's the day Jesus chooses to arrive? And Mary and Joseph receive the message from Jesus this way. "Sorry, but I had a few things to do down south. Couldn't get away. Can't believe Lazarus is dead." That's what Mary and Martha were hearing. Have you ever had that experience where someone isn't hearing what you're saying? Has anybody ever had that experience? Yeah? If you've been married for more than a half an hour, you've had that experience. This was the perfect place where I was going to insert an illustration from our marriage, but then wisdom got me, and I'm not going to do it here this morning. But you know what it's like. You're talking, and the other person is not hearing. They're not getting what you're saying, and you repeat yourself louder, because, you see, the problem is they can't actually hear. So say it louder and louder and louder, and now they still don't hear what you're saying. It's so frustrating, because no matter what you say or how you say it, it seems they just don't get what you mean. They just don't understand. And Mary and Martha just didn't understand what Jesus was saying. They didn't really understand what Jesus was doing. We have to let the story play out. The sorrow, the pain, the suffering is deep and profound. Mary and Martha are beside themselves, stricken with unbearable grief. Many of us here this morning know exactly what that's like. The loss of a husband or a wife, the loss of a child or a mother or a father, it's the kind of pain that can take your breath away. There's this constant pressure inside your chest. It's the kind of sorrow that steals your ability to even think or reason. You don't know what you should do next. You vacillate between anger and despair, and it feels like people say only ignorant things, and you wish they would just be quiet and go away. Where is Jesus in all of this? Jesus not only sees the sorrow, he feels the sorrow. When Jesus saw Mary and Martha weeping, it says that he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled twice. The words here in Greek are profoundly emotional words. Words that are difficult to translate with the same kind of impact that they're trying to make. Jesus is not just a little upset or a little irritated. Inside of these words is anger. Anger and complexity in the emotion. He's feeling a lot of different things at once, and language simply falls short of being able to express it. He's angry at what death has done to his friends. He's angry that Satan, who holds the power of death that can cause such pain and sorrow, is able to inflict death. And Jesus is angry at the lack of faith he sees in all of those that are around him. In probably the shortest and most poignant verse in all of the Bible, it says, Jesus wept. He felt in the depth of his being the pain that his dear friends felt. Sometimes the pain of what makes you angry is also the pain that makes you weep. I have sat and I have listened to someone's story of most horrific abuse, and in my anger I felt the hot sting of tears in my eyes. This isn't right. Someone's got to stop this. There's so much that isn't right. Some of the people that are watching that day say, but see how he loved them? Because of the tears. Others said, watch him cry. But if he can open the eyes of a blind man, then he should have gotten here in time to keep Lazarus from dying. Now there's the question that everyone wonders. If Jesus is so powerful, then why does he delay? Always the delay. Have you lived life long enough to figure it out by now that delays seem to be the way of God? Yeah? It seems to be one of his key strategic methods is to delay. You need me now? I'll be there in a couple of days. Abraham waited 25 years for the promise of a son that God gave him. God delayed the Israelites in the wilderness from getting to their homeland for 40 years. There are no prophets of God who spoke the word of God for 400 years between the Old and the New Testament. Delays. Always the delays. God holds back his hand from his judgment. He delays. We learn two things. First of all, that God's delays are inevitable. His ways are beyond our ability to understand completely. Occasionally, it's been my experience, that in a much later time I've been able to see how God was at work through his delay, why the delay was important, and sometimes we will never see or understand the why. It's called faith. It's trusting God with the outcome. It's believing that God continues to work for the good for those who love him. The delays give us opportunity for our faith to grow and mature. Second, we discover that the delays are not final. Can you imagine the frustration of Mary and Martha as they waited? Lazarus is getting sicker and sicker and sicker. If something doesn't come, if Jesus doesn't get here, if something doesn't change, we're going to lose him. Lazarus is going to die. But he's not coming. The ambulance is hung up in traffic. He's going to die. Maybe even Lazarus was aware that his life was fading, and that if Jesus didn't get there soon, he would be dead. Why the delay? Why do I have to learn faith lessons this way? Isn't this a bit harsh? But the delay is not final. He will come in his own way and in his own time, and listen to this. It will never, ever be too late. The right time is rarely our time. Jesus went to the tomb, called the bystanders over and said, hey, you guys, roll back the stone. Then he looked up to heaven and he prayed and he said, Father, I'm glad that you've already heard my prayer, but these other people need to know what's going to happen. So I'm really praying so that they can hear me pray out loud and that they know that what I'm really looking forward to is the way that you're going to reveal your glory to all of these people who are listening. He's mostly praying for people rather than to God at this point. Then Jesus bends over, peers into the tomb and says, easy. Lazarus, come out. And he does. Alive and well and ready to live. This is the seventh and final sign in the book of John. These are all signs that help us to see that Jesus is the Son of God. Signs like turning the water into wine, or healing the blind man, or walking on water, or feeding the 5,000. But this seventh sign is the final and the most significant sign in the book of John, the raising of a man from the dead. Death is the greatest power of sin. Death is the final blow that Satan makes. Death is the greatest power of sin. Death flies in the face of God. This is not the way things were supposed to be. Sin broke the plan of God intended for us. Death mocks the purpose of God to bring life, to give life, to celebrate life. We get it right in the middle of our passage in verse 25. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me lives, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. This, right here, is why Jesus is so angry. He saw the people he loved being robbed of life. For so many people, death has come by degrees. We don't live, but rather we die by living by degree. A slow surrender to the inevitable. But this was never God's intent. We were meant to live life and to have it abundantly, John 10:10. And it made him angry to see life robbed, to see faith small, to see the destructive power of pain, to realize that even his friends did not understand or know his power or his grace. So many things were killing them by degree. Lazarus died of a disease. Everybody gathered around, mourned and grieved. Death has a heavy sting. Sorrow is so much a part of the human experience. I've mourned and I've grieved. There's a wound that comes with loss that is not easily healed. How do you say goodbye to someone who gave you life, who's been your father, who's shown you what it is to be a man? And yet you must. There's no choice in the matter. And the sisters grieve their brother. Who wouldn't? Is there something wrong with this grief? Not at all. Jesus wept. But Lazarus' death is only one part of the story. Jesus also wept because they were unable to see that they too were dying. They were just dying by degree. So much of life is being strangled out of us. We only see what is in front of us. And then not so well. What about our lack of faith? Is it not killing us by degree? Of course, our lack of faith only becomes apparent at the critical moment, that moment when we need our faith most of all. Life seems to just be this bundle of hardships that come in chunks and bunches. Soren Kierkegaard once described it as a sickness unto death. Faithfulness is really the spiritual sickness of blindness. What is interesting in our story is that it was not the faithlessness of Lazarus that was at issue. It wasn't even that Mary and Martha and the mourners were faithless. It was that they believed there was a limit to their faith. It was believed that there was a line that once crossed rendered them powerless, their faith powerless. Jesus wept because they had stuck Jesus in a box that was tighter than a coffin. Death was beyond the ability of Jesus to address. But it was precisely death that Jesus came to conquer. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, oh, death is your sting. But thanks be to God, he gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. I wonder about the ways we've restricted God. That we've put boundaries around God. That we've stuffed Jesus into his coffin. That we've limited his power. Seems to me that these are the ways we are killing ourselves. Slowly, killing the life that Jesus came to birth in us. That was the whole point of this story. Death could not hold Lazarus. Death is not the enemy that will win. Jesus came to break the very power of death. So stop living under its power. We break the power of death by living the very life of Christ. Most of us live in some form of fear. I know that. And if we were to look at it closely enough, we would discover that it is a fear that this is one thing that God cannot handle. Oh, we would never say that. Nobody ever says that out loud. It's just how we live. I'm personally asking God to deal with that level of fear and faithlessness in my own life. Sometimes I'm very afraid of what the future has in store for me. As I've gotten older, I've realized more and more just how little control I really have over anything, and it makes me afraid. But this isn't life. This is not being alive. This is death by degree. What are the things that are killing us? Can you name them? Is it an incurable disease? Is it a fear of aloneness? Is it uncertainty or insecurity, unemployment, political unrest, relational brokenness? Are these the things that are killing you? But trusting in God destroys the fear of death. He has the power over death. He is the resurrection and the life. See, there are no walls. There are no lines. There are no limits to the power and to the grace of God. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. Will you come to me and live? And live.